There's no way that was even loaded in time.
We flammed that hard. No, we flammed
okay,
it.
Okay, we're doing it again.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh my god, why am I so nervous?
So am I.
It's no big deal. It's just a podcast episode.
I feel like I'm nervous because I've had so many DMs this week just saying how... Like, people were talking about the Patreon versus ads thing, for one, and then also just saying how much they're loving the podcast and how much it's helping them. And now I just feel all of a sudden this
weight.
This weight and this pressure, and I'm now just, like, freaking out a bit. Like, oh my god, people enjoy us talking together.
Yeah, and just so you guys have a little heads up on the behind the scenes, we were sending each other voice notes about how we've put our entire lives, everything we have, financially, emotionally, physically, into our websites. And the emails and DMs we get are like, great website, you're a cool teacher. Then this podcast is like, hey man, let's do a podcast. And people are like, you changed my life. And I'm like, what? What was the last decade of work for? So we're so happy that this podcast that was supposed to be just two drum bros hanging out has turned into something that can help you through your day. And I think it's also, there's no way that we could even pretend that this hasn't been therapeutic for us. A lot of these episodes are us getting things off of our chest, right?
Yeah, exactly. And plus us getting stuff off our chest with a filter.
Yes. It needs the filter. But a lot of times too, I feel like by preparing for these specific episodes, I find out a lot about myself and how I actually think about it. Because when somebody says inspiration, I'm like, oh, I know what that is. And then I really don't have it at the forefront of my mind where I can explain it to somebody else. So in prep, I have to go through all that. Like, what is my inspiration and how does it affect me? And then I learn so much more about myself. And if you're going through that, if you guys are going through that in your car, on your jog, at your desk at work with us, then that's just amazing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm loving it. I honestly am, mate. It's like, it's something that I look forward to in the week. I'm like, oh yes, it's podcast day tomorrow. And then on a Monday, I walk the dog listening to my own voice and your voice, which is somewhat weird. Call that what you want. But it's like, I listen to it and I'm like, mate, this is the dream podcast. I forget that it's us talking. And I'm like, oh my God, this is our podcast. It takes me so long to find a good podcast, man. There's so many things that
annoy
me.
I have to tell you guys, I get so many voice notes from Eddie going, mate, I love our podcast. I love our podcast.
I think what it is
that we're in a position where we just want to be proud of whatever we're doing, whether it's recording on an album or making video lessons or making a YouTube lesson. Whatever we do, we just want to be proud of the end result. And as two people that primarily listen to podcasts away from the drum set, that's our main form of entertainment for ourselves. Like, we want to create something of value for you guys. We want to create something that we can be proud of. And we're doing our best. And just know that we're only, 14 episodes in. This is going to get better and better and better. Now, speaking of the stuff that we talked about at the beginning of last week's episode, we won't go into too much depth. I lied. We will. I would say, 98% of all the DMs we got were in favor of listener supported or Patreon, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, 98%, but whatever.
Yeah, that was a bit weird.
It's
100%
of 98%.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Yeah, 100%, man. It's 98%. There you go.
There you go. What were your DMs like?
Great. They were just way more supportive than I thought they would be. It's just, like we said last week, it's always difficult when you're sort of saying, asking people to pay for something. It's an awkward conversation and it makes us sort of cringe, but everyone reached out just saying, I want to support. And also, I want to dive into this podcast community even more. Talking about the ideas that we've got, and the new ideas that we've got since last week, even, it's that's what I'm starting to think is really cool about this podcast, is that we are a community already. There's people who listen to this who want to meet other people who listen to this podcast and want to be put in situations, whether it be an event or even a Zoom call or whatever it may be. I think that's what's really exciting about the whole Patreon thing, is that we can do whatever we want.
Right.
So,
and I will say that the 2% of people that voted for ads, nothing wrong with that, by the way. Thank you for just being honest. But I will say the 2% that I got that wanted ads actually just didn't understand Patreon. And fair enough, because a year and a half, 2 years ago, Eddie and I wouldn't have understood Patreon. So with Patreon, or with the listener-supported idea, this podcast will always be available for everyone for free if they choose to, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, everywhere that you're getting it. Nothing changes. What happens is that a group of people that listen to the podcast, they end up becoming Patreons and they choose to support it. And you do that whenever you want. And it can be a monthly fee, and then you can stop doing it. Then you can start doing it again because you're having a better month. But those people get specific privileges. I can tell you right now, I'm a Patreon of two different podcasts. I have not taken advantage of the Patreon benefits. I really just am saying, look, I don't want you to go away. My day will be worse if you stop doing your podcast. And I know that you have a real job that pays you. So to do this podcast, you have to take time out of that real job to do this, which is losing you money. So if I can help you even that out, I'm happy to do that. I don't need the keychain from Seen Through Glass. I want the keychain, kind of, but it's not about that for me. It's just saying, look, man, you make my day better, so I'm happy to support it. So just to be clear, the reason why Eddie and I are scared to go down that ad road is because, one, if we did drum-based ads, the scary thing is, okay, well, now they're paying us money. Like, Tama Drums is paying us money. You know how I always make fun of Eddie for playing Evans? You think I can do that if Evans is paying? I'm just going to stop talking. But I can't do that if Evans is paying us money. By the way, that's always a joke and just a joke. I think Evans makes amazing heads. But I don't know if maybe I wouldn't be as sarcastic about that, or Tama or Zildjian, or Eddie wouldn't want to rib me about Meinl and Gretsch if we were being paid by those companies. So then you go outside of that world to the Costa Coffees and Starbucks and Geico Insurance, and then you really don't have a lot of control over what's going on. Mm. And the other thing is, some of the podcasts I listen to that do the ad things, they actually don't do live reads or anything. It just interrupts the podcast in mid-sentence. There's like this bell that goes off, goes ding, ding, ding. And I'm like, wait, he was in mid-sentence.
Yeah.
And then there's this like 2 minute ad. So we really were hoping that the overwhelming majority would be that. People saying, I want to support your podcast. And that's what it's been. But that being said, somebody wrote me a DM and he was like super passionate about it. And I don't know why I just asked, like, would you want to come on the podcast and talk about that? So we're inviting somebody that Eddie and I do not know.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure his name's Daniel Green. I've had some email correspondence with him. And so I'm going to see if I can bring him on now.
Why am I nervous?
I don't know, dude. Oh, I'm nervous too, bro. We are joined by listener Daniel Green. Holy hell, was that a process, my friend? Are you good?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. As good as I'm going to get.
I love it, man. I love it. I'm so sorry that we caused you this much stress. I know from your emails you were looking forward to this and everything. And then as soon as we call, your entire internet just shuts down.
Absolutely.
Oh, biscuits and buttercups. So where are you, buddy?
I am in Cave City, Arkansas. You will not find it on anything. It is the smallest little town.
I was going to say, where is that? In America?
Okay. It's a flyover state. It's like right in the middle of America. It's like, you know, it kind of doesn't matter as far as like, no. north of Louisiana, if you want to get technical.
Okay.
I love how Eddie said, okay, I know where Louisiana is.
Yeah, I'm just agreeing.
I live in America and I couldn't find Louisiana on a map. Okay, so Daniel, you sent me a DM when we asked for information about would you prefer listener supported or ad supported. And I just remember your DM being very passionate about listener supported. And I then just reached out to you and said, hey, man, would you want to chat on the podcast about why you feel this way? So the floor is yours, man.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to blaze through my notes here and y'all can full on permission to laugh at me. Okay. So when I heard about you talking about being listener supported in the last episode, my first thought was shut up and take my money. And then I thought to myself, no, self, they don't need to shut up, but they can certainly take my money. I literally couldn't finish the episode before I had to reach out to you, Mike. I mean, I guess I didn't like fully get it at the time, but kind of on reflection, I realized why my hand was raised like that excited kid that knows the answer. I was like, you know, ever since, you know, episode one of this podcast, I felt like at the end of it, I just got done having this chat with some of my best friends that, you know, also happen to be drum monsters. And, you know, you guys have this amazing way of talking about drums and everything else and make the listener feel connected. Well, I think my excitement was the thought of, you know, if there's something more, yeah, sign me up. And, you know, then thinking about what it could really become and what it could mean for the two of you, you know, the potential touring funded by us, the listeners. That was such an exciting idea for me. I mean, just blown away. You know, for just a second, let's look at the fact that the community that could be created by itself, that by itself is a perk. Let's ignore any possible like additional content or events for just a second. I know that for, you know, myself, any group I've ever been a part of, I've gotten just as much inspiration, education, and joy as I have from the content creators themselves. You know, I'm going to do a couple quick shout outs. You know, Mike's Lessons, you know, pick any one of the...
haven't heard of it.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. Right, right. You know, it's this little website. Pick any one of the student videos. The video itself, the comments, Mike's video reply. If you can't find something there, you're not really looking. NADPOD, another, you know, podcast that I listen to. Those guys are hilarious. But the community, they are just as funny and have such crazy great ideas. Recording Revolution. Outside the box thinking and feedback on any of the mixes I've ever done and have caused nothing but improvements. You know, all of that came from the community, from these great creators. Listeners, they get more by being a part of it. And, you know, let's face it, who couldn't stand to have more like-minded people to discuss anything with during these crazy times?
Wow.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. I mean,
you've, Daniel, mate, you've just stolen the show. You've just stolen the show, man. I mean, I don't know what to say, man. First of all, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Second of all, thank you so much for giving us such a compliment, mate. I'm a bit taken back, man. It's one thing to like read a DM, isn't it, or a message of someone, but when you hear their voice and just talking about it, mate, it's kind of it's got me a bit emotional, mate. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I think what you're saying, Daniel, I think you just actually proved the point. Is you were a DM in my Facebook inbox, and then you were an email. Now we just heard your voice and we know where you live and we know that you track things and you want to get better at your mixes. I mean, just even talking to you for a few moments, we know so much more about you now. And how could we not want to have a community of people like that? And we fully understand that even when we say, okay, the lowest tier of Patreon will be $5 a month, for a lot of people right now, $5 a month is like, man, I have to actually make a choice of whether I can do that or not. I fully get that. Eddie gets that. That's not really what it's about. It's about, hey, if you can, and if this podcast means something to you, can you support it so that Eddie and I can try to improve it and grow it into something else, you know? And you have to think, Daniel, like talking about the community aspect, communities don't happen without effort and time. And yeah. So as we build this thing, that's what the funding is for. It's more hours and more effort and more work, which we know turns into greater things. And, you know, man, just the thought, like Eddie mentioned it before you got on, but the thought of a Drum with Mike and Eddie Zoom call, just it's like an hour once a month. But my God, like just to get to see your guys' faces and, you know, that I think that would be amazing. So, I mean, Daniel, I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, like... Y'all had mentioned in the last episode, you know, something like these magnificent ideas, like a clinic, for example, like y'all are in the same area. And then like my mind can't even on that. Okay. Like I might not ever actually be able to attend because I live in, you know, middle America.
Oh,
or whatever.
Hell no. We would go out of our way to make sure.
Mate, we are coming to your living room.
No, right. No, we've actually met before, Mike. I mean, it's,
I know.
Okay.
Yeah. We met somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't remember meeting. Where did we meet?
No. It's okay. It's called editing, Mike. You've done the part of saying,
I'll
yes,
edit
I remember.
It out.
Edit this part out and put in the other bit. after I've told you where. And then you can be like, yeah,
okay, go ahead.
It was Memphis Drum Shop in 2012.
Oh, yeah, Memphis Drum Shop, MFD, yep.
And I was the guy that was totally geeking out side stage that was crazy enough to bring his 3-week-old kid.
Now, and I was doing a clinic. Was it in their like separate room there?
Yeah.
Yeah, their clinic room. Wow, that was a long time ago. That's right when I signed with Meinl.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Wow. Well, dude, just thank you so much for even doing this. Now, all we need you to do is rip a quick 5-minute drum solo on your kit. And so we can play that for everybody. And
it's got to be over 7/9.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, no problem. Absolutely. The problem, the problem is my kit's not here. It's actually at the church where I play Sundays, Fridays, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So maybe next time, fellas.
Well, buddy, thank you so much for doing this. And most importantly, like, thanks for no one will ever know or experience it because we will edit it all out. But what you went through just to even make this possible with the internet and with everything else, we don't take that for granted either, man. We really appreciate you joining us, man. And we are definitely going down. I mean, I guess if the announcement needs to be made, we are definitely going to go down the listener funded route and listener supported route. And everyone will always still have access to this podcast, and it's your choice whether you want to support it or not. But we also feel that just listening to it alone is supporting it, but we know that some people like you, Daniel, want to kind of go extra and be part of something even bigger than the podcast itself and be part of the community of listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know what tiers and what kind of like, but just like even just story time with Mike and Eddie of like, hey, you know, that time that I went and recorded at, you know, Dark Horse Recording Studio and I, you know, never went anywhere, but man, that was my Disneyland, you know, what is y'all's Disneyland? You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, whatever. Okay.
That's pretty awesome, man. I think we could definitely do that. And we will definitely be reaching out to you and a bunch of other listeners to ask, okay, what are your dream rewards for these tiers? So that we, you know, we mentioned it in the last episode, but we don't want it to be just something cheesy. Although someone did suggest, hey, let us hear the podcast before the podcast.
Oh,
top tier. And we were like, no, I don't think so. Maybe you can get a couple of our voice notes, but even those have to be edited out. So, well, Daniel, have an amazing day, my friend. Thank you for joining us. And most importantly, dude, thank you. Thank you for saying all those kind words. The reason why I said, Eddie, what is your response? Is because I had to like kind of take a second to take it all in and choke back the tears. I appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, mate. Thanks so much, man.
All right. See ya.
Dude.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
I know. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. It kind of just, yeah, I don't know. It brings a smile to my face. And it's actually hard to think of the words to describe, you know, like without sounding corny or cheesy or like, it's crazy, man. Like our conversations, mate, I never knew that people cared that much. You know what I mean? And just,
right.
It's nuts. Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, it is.
I'm just thinking about all the amazing things we can do. And once COVID is over, like I said to you in a voice note, we need a t-shirt that just says voice notes on it. I thought this the other day. Voice note gang. Do you know what I mean? Voice note crew.
Oh, 100%.
I was in the voice note, I said, you know, I keep on forgetting that COVID is going to go and life is going to go back to normal. And that just gets me so excited, man. Do you know what I mean? Just me coming to America, you coming over here, putting on some events, putting on some clinics, giveaways, dinners, whatever it may be, man.
Well, I know for a fact one of the things that the Patreon page will be supporting will be your airfare to get you here. I think we should do a drum camp here. And then from the end of that drum camp, we just do a West Coast clinic tour.
Yeah.
I think that, cause that's going to be one of the easiest things we can do. And like we said before, normally that stuff just isn't possible. It's not up to me and Eddie to make that choice. We need the funding from our sponsors, from our drum companies, cymbal companies and whatnot, to make that stuff happen, to pay for our time, our clinic fees. Cause each day that we're on the road, we're not at home making content for our website. Well, our website is how we make a living. Mm-hmm. So if we have to go somewhere to do a drum camp, if Eddie's in America for 2 weeks, well, he's not using my gear to make his website any better. Screw that. I'm not letting him use my lights.
That's a great shout, man. That's a great shout. I can use the Canon CS, what are they called?
C100s. C200s and C70s.
I can be that annoying guy. You know, we were speaking last week when your mate comes to the studio and borrows like a cymbal bag. I can be that guy that goes, listen, Mike, I've just got to bang out a few videos, mate. Are you right if I just put a Tamma sticker over the Gretsch logo? And just help me record. Oh, mate, imagine.
Yeah. Can you hold this camera? Yeah, and just walk around in a circle as I just rip. So I think that'll be really cool. Now, real quick, we have some other things to get to. First thing is, we did an episode on haters. And one of the things was, you know, the YouTube comments, the Instagram comments. And I would say, for the most part, Eddie and I have surpassed the hater thing. Like, it's really rare that someone just flat out is throwing shade at one of us. But I got a comment this morning, and when I read it, I was like, I literally just thought to myself, huh? I don't know how to respond to this, because it's not hate. It's actually very complimentary, but it's the most confusing comment ever. So I got it up here. Here we go.
Okay.
Whew. It just compliments me, and then it dogs society. And then it compliments me, and then it dogs society. So here we go.
Okay.
This is on one of my recent videos, Syncopated Funk Groove Drum Lesson. Thank you. Here we go. Thanks, Mike. Cool groove. Nice dog. I am in San Francisco wondering what drum shops are still in business after Governor Newsom intentionally attempts to destroy all small businesses. Really good groove, though. I need to get some fiber skin 3 heads for my rack tom and my floor tom and a pair of brushes, because during the tyrannic dystopian lockdown by our mayor. So I guess what's going on is he's saying, like, dude, you are really good on the drums, but if this Mad Max bullcrap doesn't stop in San Francisco, I'm going to throw a rock through somebody's foreface. Also, I love your linear drumming, but I don't understand why every time. It was like the most confusing comment ever. And I was like, do I delete it? Do I say, thanks, bro?
Oh,
like,
mate.
He's calling out our governor. He's calling out our entire government. But he's still like, love your groove, bro. Oh, it's amazing. Anyways, going from that, which is slightly negative, let's skew 100% positive. So I was telling Eddie that I've had this thing going on for probably the last 6 years. And this happened, I don't remember when this happened, but somebody paid me $100 for a drum lesson, maybe 6-7 years ago. It was like a 1-hour drum lesson, gave me a $100 bill. In America, $100 bills are not the easiest things to spend. You'll go to like 4 or 5 places that'll just say, sorry, I can't take that. So you end up with having this thing in your wallet for quite a while, and you don't even try it. Like, you go to a gas station, like, I'm not even going to try. And you're kind of waiting to buy something for $70 or $80 so that you can use this thing. Mm. But I honestly buy like a cup of tea. I don't really use cash ever. So anyways, what happened about however long ago this was, around December, and we are getting towards like December 20th, December 21st, the 22nd. And I don't know what it's like around where you guys live, but here things get more and more tense in the service industry because it's just pure chaos. Like, Target is overflowed. Starbucks has a line out to nowhere. And I was at Starbucks, and this barista came up, and he's like, hey, man, can I get your order? And I was like, you're awfully peppy today. And he's like, you know what? Why not? It's a great day. It's not raining, and it's almost Christmas time. And he was just like overfloweth with cheer. And I was like, okay, but I can see your other employees are losing their minds because of all the chaos and just all this stuff. And you're so incredibly positive. And when I went to go pay for this, I was like, you know what? I'm going to just give him this $100 bill. It was a random act of kindness, but he was probably 18 years old. It made his day. And from that day forward, I always, in December, I go to the bank, I get a $100 bill, I stick it in my wallet, and I just wait until someone in the service industry goes above and beyond with kindness, not just service, but positivity, especially in a time with so much chaos. And now we add 2020 into the mix, and I give it to them and just hope that it is one of those things where they were like, what's, sir, sorry, you gave me 100. What's this for? So anyways, that being said,
it's amazing.
I think it's going to be something cool for all of us, for all of our listeners and you and I. So then I told Eddie about this. And I said, hey, what do you think about just doing this for the podcast, where whatever a large tip is for you, if it's $10, $20, just something way outside of your norm. I mean, when I tip 20%. I'm not like big tipper guy. I tip 20%, but $100 for a cup of tea, it's like I want it to be something absurd. And I asked you, like, if you did this, what would it be? And you said like a big amount for you guys, like, is a 50 note, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we don't tip. That's a big thing.
Oh, so we, yeah, that's
so
right.
We don't tip at all. So even if I I gave someone a pound, they would be like, "You,
what's this for?
What do you mean? Like, tipping,
are you a tourist?
Just, like, tipping is a thing in the restaurant, and that's it. But even that's questionable. Okay. I know a lot of my mates who don't tip at all. I always do in a restaurant, but yeah, it's not a thing. So yeah, the 50 note is. Have you guys got a $100 note?
Yes. You so have. That's like okay. That's our uncomfortable one. Now we do have a 50, but I know that 50 for you is like 80 for me. So
yeah. See, this is the thing. I'm gonna do I don't 100. Want people thinking Eddie is a cheapskate. All right, Mike's doing 100, and Eddie's
no,
doing.
No. I asked you specifically, like, what is an amount that would make somebody just kind of be like, "What just happened to my day?"
Yeah,
and you said like a 50 note would be. Well, is that yeah, what it's called, a 50-pound
yeah,
note?
Yeah, because they're so rare. I actually haven't seen a 50-pound note in years. So if I were to bang out a 50 note and go, "Here you go, Steve. You've made my day. Merry Christmas, mate." I mean, it's going to make me cry. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
It's going to make everyone turn around and be like, one, you're tipping him. That's not a thing. Second of all, it's a 50-pound note. What is going on here? And then yeah. But I've, mate, to be honest, mate, bringing it back to you, man, I think that's such a beautiful thing. I told Rona and I told my boxing coach, actually, and they were just like, well, that's an amazing thing to do. So fair play, man. Hopefully you've started a trend for listeners.
Well, that's the plan is. And so if you guys want to do this with us, I think it'd be a really cool way for you to do something great. Let us know. You can let us know on social media without flexing. You don't have to be like, you know, just maybe a little tag Mike and Eddie and just say, "I did it." Or maybe just like hashtag 50-pound note. Even if it's in America and you did $100 or $20, just let's use the hashtag 50-pound note so we all know what we're talking about. And just tag us. And you don't have to do anything else. It could be like a picture of a puppy dog and then just hashtag 50-pound note. But then we know that you did it. And then Eddie and I are just kind of from now until Christmas going to go week by week and see if we got rid of this note. I'm assuming the same for you. I have to go to a bank and get one. Because I don't have a $100 bill. I don't carry cash with me.
Yeah, same. And I have to specifically ask for a 50-pound note, and they're going to be like,
oh, "What are you buying drugs?
You're the guy." You're just going to be like, "Hi guys, you accept a 50 note?" It's like that guy. But then when I spin it around and give it to someone day, they're going to be like, "Oh, that's really nice." So I'm really looking forward to it, mate. There's a few people in my mind already. I've got one drive through here, so there's definitely this one guy I'm already thinking of. So if you're listening, mate, he's not listening, but.
I think that that's kind of that goal is you just have that moment. Like yesterday, I wish I had my $100 with me because we went to this place called Reset Coffee. It's a newer place in Old Town Folsom and get along great with the owner. The staff's amazing. Pretty much the whole staff is like his family, like his kids and stuff. But there was somebody new there and she came out. She was like, "Oh my gosh, what's your dog's name?" And I said, "This is Juno," and she pets Juno. She's like, "I'll be right back." She goes inside. Gets a dog-friendly scone, says, "Can I give this to your dog?" I'm like, "Yeah." She gives it to the dog. Then she's like, "Oh, you're arugula Amber. You always ask for extra arugula, and you're matcha Mike." And it was just like this amazing, we're like looking around like, who has time to give this much customer service? And I was just thinking that, and I told Amber, I was like, that's who deserves the $100 bill. Unfortunately, I didn't have it.
I love that.
So the whole point, everybody, is you're looking for a moment in your day where you're just expecting to be treated like another cog in the machine, get moved through the drive-thru as quick as possible or whatever. And somebody just goes out of their way to be extra nice, especially with the chaos of COVID and the holiday season. And they're going out of their way to be kind. Just make their day by pulling this thing out of your pocket and going like, boom, no questions asked. You deserve this. Have a great day and walk away. Just the look on their face and the feeling you'll get is epic. All right, let's keep moving on. It is time to get into our main topic. I think we're only about 45 minutes deep. We're getting better and better at this, buddy. Okay, so this is a topic that was requested by you guys. Eddie and I have talked a lot about in the last few episodes about finding our voices and what is our voice on the kit and what does that mean? How do you have a voice other than just being good at the drum set? And a lot of people said, can you just make a whole episode on that? So we said, yeah, we can. So the first thing when it comes to your voice on the drum set is, I guess what gives somebody a voice is whether you sound 90% like somebody else or if I just can't really nail down who you sound like. Like, I can tell, I remember back in the mid to late 90s, there were so many great drummers that didn't have a voice because they listened to way too much Dave Matthews Band. And I was like, dude, you're amazing, just like Carter Beauford's amazing, but Carter Beauford sounds like Carter Beauford.
Yeah.
You sound like Carter Beauford. You don't have a voice. So having a voice doesn't mean that you're good, or being good doesn't give you a voice. I think having a voice means that you found who you are and what you want to say on this instrument. And that's a really tough thing. So my first question to you is, have you personally, Eddie, do you feel like you've arrived at your voice yet?
Yeah, I feel like I have, which is, it kind of cringes me out saying that because it feels like an arrogant statement to make. But I feel that
it wasn't
necessarily my hard work or efforts or my doing. It was mainly because of the band I was in. So because of, I joined Lower Than Atlantis like years and years and years ago, and we sort of grew up writing records. And that's when I sort of found my voice, when I started putting my drum parts towards Mike's vocal lines and rhythms. And then once the band found our sound, then I sort of did really. I remember there being a period of time where I actually really focused on it. I was like, I'm going to get a wood block, so like a cowbell. I'm going to sack off the double bass pedal. And that was my sort of thing, really. And taking influence from, the vocals, the guitar lines and the song structure, that's what sort of helped me find my voice. Otherwise, it is a really, really difficult thing to do. It's even harder, like, if you're aware that you don't really have a voice and you try to have a voice. It's something that I think happens over time. And I think it helps when you actually listen to music. What Carter was saying on the other episode, I'm very surprised, just like he is and probably you are, at the amount of amazing drummers that don't listen to music or like listen to other drummers. They're just obsessed with getting better on paper or whatever. But I feel like I found my voice in the band, mate. I'm sure you did as well, right? When you were playing in your band, you had certain things you did all the time.
Yeah, so this is something that I wonder what's going to happen with you in the next 5 years, because if you go back to my original YouTube videos, it's obvious that that's Mike Johnston from Simon Says playing without his band on YouTube. And then it took maybe a decade or more until it was like, well, who am I without my band? Because I have now made the decision, I'm never going back to that life. Like, yeah. I'm never going to be part-time educator, part-time touring drummer. Like, I am only a drum teacher. So who am I without a band? And that, was probably the last 4 years. And I would say in the last 6 months, have I recreated who I am as a player to the point that the Simon Says stuff and the rock touring is almost not really there anymore. I mean, even when we were doing the research for today, my initial thought was, okay, it's going to be Phil Collins and Abe Cunningham. And then I started listening to a bunch of Deftones stuff, and I'm like, I honestly just don't hear that stuff in my playing anymore. It doesn't mean that he wasn't one of the biggest influences in my life, and I wouldn't even be able to play drums without Mike Borden from Faith No More. I think that sometimes the drummers in your past, they're definitely in your DNA for sure, but it doesn't always mean that they are there with you in your present, like to a point that somebody could hear them. I mean, a lot of drummers that I think of from my past are the drummers that got me through giving up on the instrument. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't really hear a lot of Mike Borden from Faith No More in my playing. But then when I look back, I'm like, yeah, I remember probably about 3 to 4 years where all I did was play Faith No More songs and try to hit as hard as I could and play his kick patterns as fast as he did. So it's like I probably would have given up on the drums without him, and I have a lot of those in my path. So, okay, let's do something very cringeworthy.
Okay.
You feel like you have a voice. I feel like in the last few months, I've kind of found my voice. Now, you give me your opinion on what you think your voice is, and I will give you an outside opinion on what I think your voice is, and then you'll do the same for me.
Perfect. Sounds great. / scary.
All right. Go for it, buddy.
Okay, so I think my voice is a mixture of two people.
Okay.
Okay. One of those people is Travis Barker, and the other is Lars from Metallica. I say that because I love the creativity and the sort of the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the sort of like effortless sort of flair that Travis Barker has, right? He has flair, but he's got creativity and blah, blah, blah. But then Lars has this sort of, I don't know, this thing about him, and it's his sound, and he can have an entire arena air drum a certain part. And I love that. So yeah, that's what I think my voice is. I don't know though, you know, I don't know, but that's what I, they're the two people that I think of the most when I think of, you know, what is my drum sound? What do I sound like on the kit?
I definitely hear those two in your DNA for sure. Especially the one thing that Lars has, I mean, I think that Lars should be in that same category with Ringo, where it's, if you try to put them up against the greatest drum icons of all time, it's going to be a tough day for Lars and Ringo. You try to replace Ringo Starr or Lars with the greatest drummer in the world, and that band will not sound the same.
I mean, that's funny you say that.
And it will not be improved.
It's funny you say that. I remember one year at Download Festival, which used to be Donington. Monsters of Regret is still at Donington. Metallica were headlining one year, right? And it was, my dad took me and my brother and my friend, and we waited. Metallica were just about to come on. I was really young. I can't remember how old. Metallica were just about to come on, and it got later and later, and everyone was like, what the fuck? They're so late, like next level late. It was like, it got to about an hour past their stage time.
Wow.
And they're the headliner. So now it's probably what, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Everyone started sort of going, what's going on here? Anyway, long story short, that one of their crew, no, James from Metallica came out and said down the mic, Lars had a panic attack or something on the plane over.
Okay.
So Lars isn't here. So we're currently backstage rehearsing with other drummers to fill in for Lars. And the whole crowd just looks at each other. Mate, it's so funny you say that because this is just such a sick story. Everyone started looking at each other like, oh my God, like, what's going to go on? Who is it going to be? And it turned out to be Dave Lombardo, then Joey from Slipknot. Joey's from Slipknot at the time, so he came out with his mask on, which was really cool. If I remember correctly, Joey from Slipknot played like the majority of the set. But then what was really, really cool is that Lars's tech played a couple songs, and I remember vaguely, a listener might be able to sort of correct me or be able to tell it in a better way, but I think James said down the mic something like, he's been waiting for this moment for years.
Oh, man.
And his tech got on stage and played a song, and it was just amazing. But it didn't sound like Metallica. Nothing did.
Right.
Not even with Dave, not even with Joey. I loved Joey at the time, mate. I mean, I was wearing
Joey Jordison.
Joey Jordison, yeah. But it just didn't sound like Metallica, which is bizarre.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing I hear. The one thing that Lars has, and the reason why I brought up Ringo is Ringo has it as well. They have so much respect for space. And if you grew up listening to early Metallica, that may sound weird, but around the time that, what's the one that has Nothing Else Matters? Is that the Black Album?
Yeah, yeah.
So around the time that the Black Album came out, all of a sudden the tempos dropped to this halftime thing and these slow 6-8 tunes, and Lars was going, sha, ka, ka, gulata, ka, ka. And it was like, wait, what happened to, all right, this is our ballad and those are my feet. Like, and it was a huge shift. I mean, I remember I was, you know, a teenager listening to Metallica at the time. And I just remember thinking like, wow, I don't know a lot of metal drummers that would respect that much space. And I assume, and I don't know, maybe you know as a fan, but I assume a lot of that must have had to do with Bob Rock just telling Lars, like, just, you got to do this, man. I don't know where it came from, but I know there was a big shift in his drumming. And from that moment on, Lars was up there for me in the top drummers in the world of allowing something to breathe, especially fills.
Mm.
And, you know, and I do hear that in your drumming quite a bit, because you can be as busy as any fusion drummer out there, but you choose a lot of times to, even your mix. You talked about this, I think, in the last podcast, but you've even created a snare tone that is longer because of the reverb and the tonality of it, that allows you to just hit a note and let it breathe instead of playing 32 notes per bar.
Yeah.
And so I do hear that in your playing. I will say, from the outside looking in, when I think of your voice, I think of power right away. You're a super powerful drummer. And I think that comes from Lars and Travis for sure. Really Travis. Travis is one of the first people we saw that was like, wait, how can you go that ham on the kit, but it's still super precise? That doesn't make any sense. You should be sloppy for how crazy you're going, but he was flawless. And then the other thing I hear is just this kind of outsider's perspective, talking about you.
Right.
An outsider's perspective on modern YouTube drumming from 10 years ago. You must have been a fan of early days Gospel Chops videos because it's in there, but it's in there through a different lens. It doesn't sound like you grew up playing at Pentecostal churches and gospel churches. It sounds like you watched it from the outside and brought it into Travis and Lars. And then that amalgamation of those three things, like the modern YouTube drumming of 5 to 10 years ago, plus your heroes, has created this thing that is now Eddie Thrower.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, the gospel thing is weird. It was when I decided to leave the double bass drum. I saw players like Eric Moore and, you know, other players like that. And I loved it. It was that same sort of like, a gospel feel you can use in a metal song, which is bizarre. Yes. Blows my mind.
Yep.
And it was that same sort of thing. Like they're making these feels sound like they've got two feet when they're only using one. And it's just, yeah, just kind of, it was a thing that I needed to sort of drive me and inspire me more, because I kind of hit a wall. Like I said, I just played the same things, right, left, kick, kick, right, left, the whole time with the double bass pedal. So yeah, it's interesting, man. Also, what I like about Lars and Travis real quick is their identity. You know, if you got a non-drummer and sat him behind the kit and said, drum like Lars, he would do the whole sort of weird faces, arms up high. And you said, now play Travis, you know, they would lower the drums and just do the arms flailing and hat backwards. And they've just got... you can draw their kits. You know what I mean?
Ah, wow. Great point. Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree.
What about you?
Here we go.
Okay.
Okay. So what I think my voice is a combination of a lot of different drummers, but the two drummers I hear the most is, it's very odd because I did not study them growing up at all. So I can only assume that they were also influenced by the drummers that I followed, and some of the drummers I followed were influenced by them. So what I mean by that is I hear so much Steve Gadd and Keith Carlock in my current playing, but I never really studied either of them. I mean, I was lucky enough to do a camp with Keith 2 years ago and got to really spend some time with him. And I was like, wow, we had such different journeys, but I still just really, really love your playing a lot. And what I mean by Steve Gadd and Keith Carlock is this kind of very syncopated, it's like funk drumming without a funk band, but it's no real commitment to a backbeat. The backbeat is elusive. The overriding theme of everything that I feel like I play is pulse instead of groove. They're like, you can bob your head to it, but you don't know what time signature it's in. You don't really know where the one is. And then I would say the other thing that I've found in my voice, or I hope that I'm trying to display, is a sense of texture. Like I want my ghost notes and my hi-hat chicks and my hi-hat accents and my hi-hat tip of the sticks and then my rim shots. I want them all to blend into this tapestry where it's like, I don't know if he has two snares or if he has one snare or if he has auxiliary hi-hats or if he's using a cross stick. Was that percussion? Was that a shaker? Like, I want it all to just kind of become this amalgamation of texture. So that's kind of what I think my voice is.
Yeah, I mean,
now you can rip me to pieces.
Mate, to be honest, you've pretty much summed it up, man. Like, I remember saying this on another episode because you were talking about your voice and having an identity behind the kit. And, you know, I can scroll down my feed and I'll look at it and stop on a random drum video, and I will always know it's you when it is you, because you have just sort of dialed in that sort of texture. I think it's it's obviously a mixture of your playing, but it's also how you record the drums. It's how you play them. What I like about your playing is that what you just said as well is that, you know, you have done the rock stuff and you can turn it on when you want, but there's like another level to it where it's like, drummers can watch you and go, okay, yeah, I love that. I also love the flow of your playing. I love that. I envy that. There's definitely a flow to it, especially with your left foot. You can just play whatever you want and just have your left foot going, which is just fucking insane. It does my head in. I watch it and I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could do that. When I go to do like a tasty feel, my left foot just stops. But yeah, I love that, man. I love that. But I think you personally never have to worry about your identity or sound, mate. I think the listeners would agree that you've definitely honed that in, like 100%, man. 100%. Down to like the current kit that you're playing. I just said that Travis and Lars, you can draw their kits. You can now draw a Mike Johnston kit, you know what I mean? Thanks, bud. Yeah, so I think you've smashed it, mate. It's definitely something that is I just love how you know I can stop on Instagram and I can just hear it's your sound straight away, mate. It's wicked.
Well, same to you, and I think that's what we'll get into in just a second, which is how do you guys out there find your voice and how do you chip away at it? Because having our voices, that is not the purpose of this podcast, is for Eddie and I to go like, right? I'm kind of nailing it, right? Like, that's not what we were going for. We wanted to say, okay, as two people that used to not have our voice and then created that voice, how did we do it? So we'll get into that in a second. But first, we spent so much time talking about our influences that I want to play some clips for you. I told Eddie, like, hey, man, go try to find some Lars and some Travis that you think actually an audio clip that actually still I could hear that in you right now. And so we're going to do that. We'll start with my influences just because in our doc there at the top. So my two main influences that I tried to track down, ooh, I think you can actually hear that in my playing, was Phil Collins and Steve Gadd.
Okay, cool.
And Phil Collins, I picked a Genesis song called No Reply At All. And I want you to just listen to the hi-hat accents, the non-hi-hat accents, the open hi-hats, the ghost notes, the snare. Imagine taking all the faders from the band and the vocals and everything and dropping it out and just give it a listen and see if you can kind of hear that. So we will listen to that now. So do you hear any of that?
I hear it all, to be honest, mate. It's funny, when I was listening to that then, I pictured you, your front angle of your kit with you smiling whilst playing. That's so funny.
Bro.
It's like the sizzles of the hat, like you just mentioned. Like, you've definitely got that sort of hi-hat. Your hi-hat work is something that I've always admired, because I remember I'd never really seen it done before, mate. That you play like a groove and you use your left foot to get the note out instead of to free up your hands. Which I've never really seen done before, which I fucking love. But yeah, I definitely see that and hear that 100%. Yeah.
Okay. So that is like the stuff that I was jamming to as a teenager that hasn't left me. So I was playing that at the same time as Living Color, Faith No More, Snapcase, Deftones. For some reason, Genesis and to give credit, Peter Gabriel, for some reason, those two guys and Sting, three guys, never left my playlist. It was always, you know, metal or whatever metal was, and then those guys. And when I heard that today, I was thinking, okay, is there any Phil Collins still left in me? And as soon as I played that track, I was like, dude, if you drop the faders, that's like a groove that I'd play right now on Instagram.
Mate, okay, I recorded in Genesis Studio a couple of years ago.
I'm sorry, what?
It's like his house. Like, I'll find the exact name of it. So I recorded with a band, and I was doing like a session for them, and they went, this is the studio, turn up. And then I got in there, and it was like one of the guys from Genesis' son was like the main engineer, and it was Genesis' studio with Genesis' gear everywhere. Mental.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's epic.
So I just had to chuck that in there.
No, you win. I don't even have a story that can. I wanted to go with like, well, you know, one time I. No, never mind. All right, next influence. Once again, this is somebody where I actually was not directly influenced by it, but I guess I was, because I never really noticed it. I was not a big Steve Gadd fan growing up. It wasn't that I wasn't a Steve Gadd fan. It just wasn't in there with my Weckl and Vinny and other stuff and Manukache. So, but when I listen to something like this, this is a drum solo. It's on YouTube. It says Steve Gadd drum solo, Switzerland, 1989. Right at like the 40-second mark, it's impossible to say that I wasn't massively influenced by Steve Gadd, because I still play this stuff now with a little less power. He's very powerful at this time, but it's very similar to the way that I play now. So let's give it a listen.
Man, fantastic.
I mean, first of all, nothing is new. Like, these cats have been doing this since the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Like, there's nothing new. If he would have showed up on Instagram when he was 26, he'd own the world. He kind of does already, but...
Mate, I mean, yeah, mate, it's, yeah, I can hear it again, mate, which is funny. And what, I mean, this is the thing, like, your Steve Gadds and Weckles and stuff, I've never really dived into that world, which is interesting. Because, to be honest, I found it quite intimidating, especially being, like, a rock guy, you know. And that's what I think is really cool about you. You can be, you know, you've got a lot of eyes on you. Not that they haven't, I don't mean that, but you can... You've got a very clever way, not clever, just a very authentic way of making these things seem obtainable. Do you know what I mean? Because for me, like getting into this stuff back in the day, I used to kind of avoid it because I knew that it was out of my league, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I don't know how I made that transition. I think there, I lucked out by working in a music store at a drum shop early on. And so I was exposed to all these things. My birthday present was always as a kid, like, and you get another year subscription to Modern Drummer. And I'm like, yes, like you're letting me in on this world. And even though it was unobtainable, you know, you just keep practicing and practicing. And then all of a sudden you go back to that old Dave Weckl videotape you have while you're 14 and you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I actually know what he just did. I know that one. Like, yeah. Out of that 10-minute solo, I know that 2-second little thing. Yeah. Okay, he doesn't have access to rudiments that I don't know about. He doesn't have access to gear that I can't get. He doesn't have access to information that I can't have. He just put in the hours. Okay, I think I can do this. So, all right, let's jump into your influences. So the first one we have is a clip from Lars, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like right. One of the biggest songs ever. We're going in at 4:29, mate.
Watching you air drum that is epic. You love that stuff, man. That's so good, but I totally hear it. I absolutely hear it. Like, you know, one thing that Lars did a really good job of, and you just air drummed it, is at this time, so many people that would have done that fill, they would have done the around the world fill. So four per drum. And he was the first guy that really played these loud, slappy toms that was like breaking it up.
Yeah.
And it had this like broken feel to it, even though it was a constant stream of 16th notes, it still sounded syncopated. And it gave us this thing of like, oh, so it doesn't have to be digga 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 digga.
Mate,
and really, really cool stuff.
The crashes
on the snare.
On the two. And the one thing that I do to this day, pretty much in every single video that I put up on Instagram, he finishes the four on the floor and then the two on the crash. One, two, three, floor, two, ka. So there's a gap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He finishes on the floor. Yeah. Not a cymbal, and then comes in with the two on the crash, which I do in every single video, mate. I love it. Bada-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-boom. Gah! It's sick, mate.
All right, let's jump to your other influence. This is Mr. Travis Barker with Blink-182. I mean, we are going to get sued for using this, right?
Probably.
But fucking, who cares?
Fucking. We're bringing eyes to these boys.
The Travis Barker hurt us.
We spoke about it in the other episode, mate, and I thought, you know what? This is the perfect song. So that is, what's it called? Violence by Blink-182, mate. I mean, that intro is just like, if that doesn't make you want to just go to your drum kit and play drums, I don't know what will.
Yeah. I mean, there is some serious John Bonham-ness to that, where the drumming is tangible to non-drummers. I mean, just the 4-stroke rough of snare, rack, floor, kick. Right? It's just like that one thing where like when someone explains it to you and you go, wait a minute. So that's right, left, right, kick, snare, rack, floor, kick. And it's like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you can just, and it's just a 4-stroke rough, but and you can do it twice. Like you can do it once, like he did, ticket boom, or twice, ticket boom, ticket boom.
Yeah, mate, it's beautiful, man. It's just like Travis to a T. It's like you've got flair in there, but there's also just like there's musicality there. Like he's playing for the song. It starts with space, and then it builds up to this point where you're like, oh my god, where's the one? Sweet groove comes in. I love it.
I almost feel like I could see Mark or Tom or the producer being like, no, 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 like just go ham, go for it. Go. And I could see him going like, no, 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 just wait.
Yeah.
Like let the tension build. And like when they think that tick-de-boom is all I got, I'm going to give them tick-de-boom, tick-de-boom. And when they think that's the peak, I'm going to give them.
So good, mate. It's just like with that like 13-inch Orange County drum and percussion snare with like five holes in them, and it's just like, oh my lord, man. It's just so good, mate. And that's what I love, man. I love those two guys. But yeah, man.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's get into it. Let's help the listeners out. I'm fired up right now, by the way. I'm like sweating down the back of my hoodie. Okay, so Phil Collins and Steve Gadd and Keith Carlock and Abe Cunningham. Lars Ulrich. Do you say Ulrich or Ulrich?
I don't know. I change it up every time. Lars Ulrich, I think. Okay. Yeah, Lars Ulrich.
Okay. Let's go with Lars Ulrich and Travis Barker. It's easy to steal from those guys because they already did it. All we have to do is have enough hours in and take what they did and copy it and plagiarize it. Okay, well, then how did we ever find our own voices if all we were doing is borrowing from our influences? And so there must be something else there. So is there something that leads you from, say, learning that Blink-182 song and you have this massive sense of accomplishment and then realizing, oh, by the way, you just copied something that was done 5 years ago. And I mean, that's all that happened, but there's no Eddie in that. So how do we get to Eddie Thrower if you're just taking it from these people? There must be something else in your practice.
Yeah, I think I just think listening to music is such an underrated thing. Like I mention it again, but the Carter McLean episode when we spoke about it, I've thought about that so much since we spoke about it, man. And I'm like, mate, listening to music is just such an important thing to do, and listening to other drummers. And I feel like I just spent so many years being in a van with my mates on tour, listening to every single record that came out, every single new record. Then someone at the back would be like, have you heard this band? No, I haven't. We'll put it on. And it just sort of, I think after a while, it's like, you know, yet again, I love the, is it a metaphor? No, it's not, an analogy of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And I think after years and years and years and years and years of just listening to this, doing that, playing that, doing this session, whatever it may be, I'm just looking at a wall and I'm just like, those sort of few things have now stuck. And that's what I like.
And I think you have to take the things that you're gaining from your influences and bring them into something that is you. Like when I did that little Travis Herta thing, it's so foreign to me. And I learned
it
that
got me
stuff
fired up,
from,
man. I want to see you do your next Instagram video. Please just do one of those.
I'll go out to the kit and do it right now.
go on. Here we go. Please be able to hear it on the mic. Yes! Yes, mate! That is amazing, man. Oh, I love that. Oh, mate. Honestly, man. It's so good to hear you play like that. It's just that first feel, two on the tom, one on the snare, man. On the snare. It's just like the best feel ever, mate. I love that.
It is.
I love
but
that.
But what I was going to say is, as I catch my breath, it's a freaking cardio.
God, I'm fired up, mate.
So that thing doesn't, it's not my natural tendency to go to that pop punk beat. So this, to me, what I would do is bring it into my world. So if I mix Travis with the Deftones, it's,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So that's where I think your voice comes in, is you start blending. I've always considered these drummers that we're influenced by to be the DNA of our voice. And you start mixing up the gene pool with like, okay, well, I'm going to take Travis Barker and you mix that with Lars Ulrich, and all of a sudden you've got something kind of new. Mm. And then maybe for some reason around that same time, your parents were listening to some 70s funk, and you're like, ooh, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
And you bring that in, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we're making a brand new drummer that's never existed before. And I think when I put Phil Collins with Mike Borden from Faith No More, and then I mixed Keith Carlock with Abe Cunningham from the Deftones, and then Dave Weckl with Steve Jordan, and put all of that inside me, it started to create this thing. So I think as much as Eddie and I want to tell you guys, you need to sit on the kit in a dark room and just find your voice. It's, I think really music is the key. It's blending those things together and almost taking notes mentally on, I love that little thing. You know, I mean, that dig-da-boom thing that Travis did. Well, Bonham did that a lot.
Yeah.
And Steve Gadd does that all the time. And so you're allowed to take these things. And it's, nobody owns these things. You can't say like, well, I guess Eddie did a blujda, so I can never do a blujda. And Travis did a herta, so that's off the table. It's just, well, maybe you don't go the whole way through with, maybe you just do herta left. So herta, and then one extra left. Well, now it's a four. And now it leads you into something.
Yeah. That's just like a start.
You know, now it's,
yeah, start.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. If your influences can become a launch ramp, I always say this analogy, like if your influences or the lessons that Eddie gives you or the lessons that I give you, that should be a launch ramp to get you in the air. Mm. Now that you're in the air, start making up some tricks, man. I had to get you in the air, get you started.
It's so funny you say that. I don't know how long this podcast is, but it's just, we're on fire right
we're
now.
We're going
just,
deep, bro.
We're going deep. I just did like an interview with someone, like a college thing a minute ago. And they were like, you know, we were just talking about lessons. And I said, you know, we all teach the same things. There's a million things out on YouTube out there for free. The aim for me and the aim for, you know, yourself as well, Mike, like just is to inspire you. As long as you click pause on that video or you finish watch that video and you go play drums for 3 hours, even if you're not playing the same thing that I just taught you or spoke about, we've won. That's all we want to do, is just encourage you to play. And I love that, mate. And that's the same thing, man. Like listening to music, watching live music, watching drummers play online, watch the things that you like. Subconsciously, you'll take things. And then the next time you sit at a kit and have fun, you'll just, it will all sort of evolve into your sort of DNA. I kind of lost my point then. I was fired up too much and now I've hit a flipping wall. Do you know what I mean? You never
do
that.
I shouldn't have gone out there and played that film. No, sorry,
mate, I loved it. You wouldn't be able to hear, but I was playing the guitar part to it. I was going down and down and down and down and down. But yeah, I love it, man. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
I think that we're in the same place with that, which is okay. Here's a good example, and I think we can kind of go off on this or get out on this, but I remember I was in the lobby of my old business called the Drum Lab with another drummer, and there was a TV playing, and I think there was like maybe a Tony Royster video, or there was some sort of cool drummer video going on. And that drummer was like, hey, can you pause that and rewind it and pause that and rewind it and pause that and rewind it? And he was working out note for note what that drummer just did. And I was just kind of stepping back watching the process, because this was a very good drummer that I respected. And I was like, oh, wow, he note for note worked out that lick. I have never been that person. I've always been the person to see the thing on TV and then take that straight to the kit, knowing I can't recreate it because I didn't work it out. But I remember the vibe.
Yeah.
And I'm going to recreate that vibe, but the rights and lefts won't be the same as what that person did. And that's why I don't really feel guilty. Like if somebody said, oh, that sounded kind of Keith Carlocky, it's like, I'm sure it did. I'm a huge fan. I've listened to a ton of his drumming, but I've never sat down and been like, okay, so it's kick, right, kick, left. Like I've never done that with any of my favorite players. I would say I've definitely transcribed some grooves just because I wanted to learn how to play the song, or maybe I was in a band that was going to cover the song. But as far as creating my voice, I think it's important, like you said, like pause the video and run to the kit with that inspiration, and just whatever happens, happens. And really, I think as far as arriving at your voice, it's almost someone else alerting you to the fact is when you know it's happened, when they're like, oh man, like what you said about, I can scroll through Instagram and I know it's you. It wasn't until some other people had said that a few, maybe like 6 months ago, that I was like, really? just because you saw that it was blue sparkling. You're like, no, I wasn't even looking at the video. And it's like, oh, wow. Okay, I guess we're here. And I feel the same way about your playing. I definitely feel that way about Carter's playing, Mark Juliana's playing. There's so many players, you know, Juan Mendoza, where I just go like, oh, yeah, I know exactly who that is. I don't even have to look at it, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
So, all right, everybody. Well, I hope this 14-hour episode you through.
I need a piss so bad. It's unreal. I'm like...
okay.
I've drank this whole thing of coffee, and I drank so much water today, and I'm like... loving it, but my knees are shaking and I'm like, got the tingles.
All right, everybody, we really appreciate it. Rate and review, and we will see you guys in the next episode. Episode 14 is in the can.
Bye.
And Eddie's going to the can.
Yeah, I'm going
later
to the can right now.
See you. Go.
Bye.